Sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. No shorthand.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. The show you're about to hear originally aired in the fall of 2016. Things are really heating up in terms of 9/11 truth surrounding this 15th anniversary. As the government, the prostitute media, as Paul Craig Roberts calls them, continue to spit out the lies of the official conspiracy theory of 9/11, more credible and honest people around the world are working hard to expose the truth of 9/11, the fabricated global war on terror, and other deep state events. Here are just a few of the impressive events, books, and acts of courage that are going on around the world for 9/11 truth. First, Jill Stein, presidential candidate for the Green Party, has just announced that she wants a new investigation into 9/11. Here's Cliff Judy of Newsy to tell you about it.
Jill Stein wants a new investigation into the terror attacks on September 11, 2001. The Green Party presidential candidate released a statement on her website that said, "We need to learn the full story of 9/11. Stein claims the 9/11 Commission was stonewalled by the Bush administration, saying the report contained so many omissions and distortions. And a few of the commission members did say the administration gave them obstacles. Stein points out the co-chairs of the report wrote a book saying they thought in many ways the commission was set up to fail. The 9/11 Commission was given $3 million and just over a year to complete its report, and it had a rocky start. The commission had to wait about 4 months before they could get to work. Stein vows if she's elected president, she'd create a new 9/11 Commission, not dominated by members with an interest in protecting the reputation and careers of foreign affairs and intelligence communities. For Newsy, I'm Cliff Judy.
I understand that Green Party presidential candidate Jill Stein is getting a lot of flack for making that courageous statement. So if you hear someone in the prostitute media or another politician attacking Jill Stein for this statement about the new investigation, please contact them and let them know that you agree with Jill Stein. To read this article where she calls for a new 9/11 inquiry, you can go to the website globalresearch.ca. And just do a search for Jill Stein. It's a very inspiring article. I would encourage you to check it out. The second sign that 9/11 truth is breaking out is that a European journal has recently published an article about the controlled demolition of the three World Trade Center towers on 9/11. And I'm going to read to you about it from an article by Paul Craig Roberts called JFK and 9/11. The tide is turning. The official story is now the conspiracy theory. And here goes. In a few days, it will be the 15th anniversary of the alleged Al-Qaeda attack on the World Trade Center and Pentagon, and we are witnessing the fading protection that the charge of, quote, conspiracy theorist provides for the official government story. Indeed, the official 9/11 story is collapsing before our eyes. Europhysics, the respected publication of the European physics community, has published an article by scientists who conclude that, quote, the evidence points overwhelmingly to the conclusion that all three World Trade Center buildings were destroyed by controlled demolition, unquote. Few American scientists can admit this because their careers depend on U.S. government and military security complex research contracts. Independent scientists in the U.S. are a vanishing breed. An endangered species. The scientists say that in view of their findings, quote, it is morally imperative that 9/11 be the subject of a truly scientific and impartial investigation by responsible authorities, unquote. And a third sign that 9/11 truth cannot be silenced is the brave Colorado public TV station's recent airing of a new film called Demolition of Truth during their recent fundraising campaign. And they were giving away 9/11 Truth videos as a premium, and I understand they did very well. To learn more about that, you can go to their website, which is ctv12.org. So again, that's C as in Colorado, C, tv12.org. And another example of how the truth about 9/11 and the fabricated global war on terror cannot remain hidden is because of authors who have the courage to write books revealing the truth. Today, I'm going to tell you about three of those. One is Christopher Bullin's two companion books called Solving 9/11. There's a very organized effort to censor him on his latest speaking tour in the U.S. by attacking the venues and threatening them. These efforts to censor have been partially successful, so please check out Christopher Bullin's book, Solving 9/11. And another book is by Lance DeHaven Smith called Conspiracy Theory in America, published by the University of Texas Press. Here's what Paul Craig Roberts has to say about this book. Conspiracy Theory in America tells the story of how the CIA succeeded in creating in the public mind reflexive, automatic stigmatization of those who challenge government explanations. This is an extremely important and readable book, one of those rare books with the power to break you out of the matrix. And the third book is by Dr. David Ray Griffin. It'll be released sometime in October of 2016. As many of you know, David Ray Griffin has written 10 books on 9/11 and has been a key figure in the 9/11 truth movement. His latest book is titled, How Bush and Cheney Ruined the World. And I'm told that the first two-thirds of the book are about Bush and Cheney, and the last third is about the miracles of 9/11, as he refers to the official story, you know, of being full of miracles and not scientific fact. There were many 9/11 truth events held around the U.S. on September 10th and 11th, but the biggest one was in New York City at Cooper Union. And it was called Justice in Focus, and their website is justiceinfocus.org. And I'll be sharing some of the speeches with you on future broadcasts from that event. Many of them are already up on YouTube, or you can catch them at their website, justiceinfocus.org. I do caution that I don't support the efforts by some in the 9/11 truth movement to blame 9/11 on the Saudis. They have done this by supporting former Senator Bob Graham in his efforts to release the 28 pages of the Joint Congressional Inquiry. And here's a recent interview between James Corbett of thecorbettreport.com and Michelle Chusadovsky, one of the co-founders of the website globalresearch.ca. If you listen to them, you'll understand why working with former Senator Bob Graham around these issues does not promote 9/11 truth. So here they are. James Corbett of thecorbettreport.com and Michelle Chusadovsky, co-founder of the wonderful website globalresearch.ca. This interview comes from Global Research TV.
As we reach the 15th anniversary of 9/11, the establishment is attempting to derail 9/11 truth with disinformation about Saudi Arabia. But as Michelle Chusadovsky of globalresearch.ca points out, if we ever hope to derail the never-ending war on terror, we must be absolutely clear that neither Al-Qaeda nor Saudi Arabia could have pulled off the attacks of that day.
The tragic events of September 11, 2001 constitute a fundamental landmark in American history, a decisive watershed, a breaking point. Millions of people have been misled regarding the causes and consequences of 9/11. 9/11 marks the onslaught of the global war on terrorism, used as a pretext and a justification by the United States and its NATO allies to carry out a war without borders, a global war of conquest. A far-reaching overhaul of military doctrine was launched in the wake of 9/11. 9/11 was also a stepping stone towards the relentless repeal of civil liberties, the militarization of law enforcement, and the inauguration of police state USA. Endless wars of aggression under the humanitarian cloak of counterterrorism and the responsibility to protect are set in motion.
So we are now at 9/11/2016, 15 years after the initial events. Tell us, in your estimation, where the 9/11 truth movement has come to in terms of its consensus on the key understandings of what happened on that day?
Well, I think the fundamental consensus which was reached several years ago was that Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda could not, under any circumstances, have brought down the buildings, because those buildings were brought down through controlled demolition. And then, of course, there was the issue of Building 7, which collapsed in the afternoon of 9/11, and that, in effect, was barely covered by the media, as we recall. And again, no questions asked as to why a third building, which was not the object of attack, which had only small debris of fire, etc., all of a sudden had collapsed. And very significant, the media, both CNN and the BBC, announced the collapse of Building 7 at least 20 minutes before the actual occurrence, which points to, quote, a conspiracy at the highest levels, including, of course, the media itself.
So given this base-level understanding that Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda could not possibly have organized the demolition of those buildings that did take place on that day, what do you see as the outcome of the latest narrative that is being injected into a lot of erstwhile alternative media right now that is seeking to pin the blame not on Al-Qaeda, but now on Saudi Arabia, given the commotion we've seen from Senator Bob Graham and others in recent months and years about the 28 pages that were recently released?
Well, these 28 pages constitute, in a sense, a tacit mechanism whereby the narrative, the original narrative, which has largely been refuted, can be reinserted. And in fact, it infiltrates the 9/11 truth movement. I've noticed that many scholars and analysts of 9/11 are prepared to accept it and don't understand the underlying logic. First of all, it has to be mentioned that Bob Graham and Porter Goss are very much involved in the propaganda process of 9/11. And that goes back to August 2001, when they visited Pakistan and met up with the head of ISI, in other words, Pakistani intelligence, General Mahmoud Ahmad. And then they returned to Washington. And then it just so happens on the morning of 9/11, they were having breakfast together with General Ahmad when it actually happened. Now, at the time, of course, we looked to this ISI connection, Pakistani intelligence, in the sense that ultimately we believed that ISI was a sponsor of the 9/11 attacks. We spoke of the money man behind 9/11, which was Mahmoud Ahmad. And then we were led to believe that the ISI was in fact sponsoring the hijackers and so on and so forth. But we also knew that those hijackers, Al-Qaeda, alleged hijackers, were linked to the CIA. And in other words, to say that Al-Qaeda is behind the 9/11 attacks ultimately points to the fact that the CIA was involved, because they are, and they have been since the late 70s, they've been the sponsors, the intelligence sponsors of Al-Qaeda, and Al-Qaeda is an intelligence asset. But in retrospect, Bob Graham and Porter Goss were involved in what we might describe as the preparation of a propaganda campaign, of which the purpose was actually to sustain the legend that Al-Qaeda was behind it. Okay? Now, there's another very important occurrence which has long been forgotten. Dan Rather, CBS News, in an authoritative report, confirms that on the 10th of September 2001, the leader of Al-Qaeda, namely Osama bin Laden, was admitted to a Pakistani military hospital in Rawalpindi. Now, anybody who has been to Rawalpindi knows that this is a military city. It's the headquarters of the military intelligence. It's swarming with U.S. military advisors. And then, of course, in the wake of 9/11, they say, where is Osama bin Laden? We can't find him. And then the historic words of Donald Rumsfeld at the time, it's like looking for a needle in a stack of hay. We don't know where he is. But that was a lie. They knew perfectly well that on the 10th, he has been admitted to a Pakistani military hospital, which was within walking distance of the U.S. military missions, and that he could not reasonably have coordinated these attacks, admittedly, if he coordinated, but he should have been present in some form or another, presumably from his laptop, you know, in the hospital. But the issue is that his whereabouts were known. He was admitted on the 10th. I don't have confirmation as to when he was released, but assuming he was released on the 11th, normally he would have been arrested immediately, and he was not. So that this, in effect, is also another element. There are many elements, but that is a notorious element. The whereabouts of Bin Laden were known, he could have been arrested, and then the saga would have been over, but that didn't happen. What did happen, because the propaganda campaign was launched, is that on the 12th of September, NATO, the Atlantic Council, its governing body, intimated that the United States had been attacked by a foreign power. They didn't mention the foreign power, but the foreign power was Afghanistan. Now, I didn't see any, nobody saw any Afghani jets in the streets, in the skies of New York that particular day. So that what they had done is to invoke Article 5 of the Washington Treaty, which is the founding document of the Atlantic Alliance, namely NATO, and then use this under the doctrine of collective security to announce a war against Afghanistan on the grounds of self-defense. Now, a couple of very crucial elements behind this. One is that through diplomatic channels, the Afghani government, which the Americans call the Taliban, they contacted the U.S. State Department and said, if you wish that we facilitate the extradition of Osama bin Laden and you provide us some grounds that he might have been involved in these events, we'll gladly enter into collaboration with you. And this offer from the Afghani authorities was made on two separate occasions to George W. Bush, and his response was, we do not negotiate with terrorists. In other words, they refused to extradite Osama bin Laden to the United States for a legal procedure. And instead, they proceeded in a criminal and a legal invasion of a sovereign country in Central Asia. Now, another important dimension to this whole saga is that you do not prepare a theater war in Central Asia, thousands and thousands of miles away, in less than 28 days. Impossible. Okay? So in other words, from the 11th of September to the 7th of October, you are not in a position from a military standpoint. Every military analyst knows it. All those who are on contract to the media organizations, they know that military planning takes a lot of time. In other words, that war on Afghanistan was prepared before 9/11, not after 9/11.
And just to further back up what you're saying there, I'll direct the viewers to National Security Presidential Directive 9, which was officially signed on October 25th, 2001, and was the National Security Directive devoted to eliminating the Al-Qaeda network and using all elements of national power to do so, including military. But that was signed on October 25th, 2001. It was presented to the president on September 4th, 2001, 1 week before 9/11 occurred. So, just to back up your statement about the military planning that obviously went into the invasion of Afghanistan in October of 2001, given 9/11's role as the fundamental event which set in motion these borderless wars of aggression and the consolidation of the police state within the United States and the panopticon level of surveillance that has taken place in the name of protecting and securing the public from this imaginary terror threat, what then do you say to those who say that we're 15 years past this event, it's time to give up on 9/11 as a rallying call for activism or a way of trying to divert what's happening right now?
No, I think that 9/11 is absolutely fundamental because the narrative, the official narrative, the propaganda narrative is extremely fragile. And if we can break that consensus that Al-Qaeda is the outside enemy of the Western world and that Muslims, you know, and Muslims are killing our people in various terrorist attacks in European cities and so on and so forth, then we break the consensus. We show, in fact, that Al-Qaeda is being used as a pretext and a justification to wage war. But there's another element. We know for a fact that that decision directive, which you mentioned, was never implemented. Quite the contrary. immediately after the 9/11 attacks, the United States and its allies, through various mechanisms, has consistently supported Al-Qaeda, the Al-Qaeda networks, throughout, I mean, not solely in the Middle East and Central Asia, but in sub-Saharan Africa with Boko Haram, in the Maghreb, in Libya, in Syria. They support the ISIS, they support the Al-Qaeda-affiliated opposition, they support the moderate terrorists. Now, if they had been consistent in defining their counterterrorism role, they would have gone after these guys. They didn't. Quite the opposite. And it would have been very easy to liquidate the ISIS, Daesh convoys and the Toyota trucks when they crossed from Syria into Iraq with no, absolutely, with conventional weapons. The U.S. Air Force could have come in a matter of 20 minutes, they would have liquidated them. So again, we have a whole series of events which lead to the extension of this global war on terrorism. But you see, what is now happening with the 28 pages is that they say Saudi Arabia is involved. Now, that is really a way of shifting the blame in the state sponsorship of terrorism to a foreign power, with a view essentially to creating a vacuum in terms of any kind of police investigation as to who might be responsible. And I'm not going to say who is responsible, because I think that has to do with the police investigation. All we can say at this stage is the official narrative is a lie. It's based on fabrications. It doesn't stand up. It has been refuted. And the next stage is, of course, that police authorities respond to their mandate and conduct an investigation. Without 9/11, they would be in great difficulty in waging the wars in Syria, Yemen, and other countries around the world, because the 9/11 consensus provides them with the pretext. It's a war of self-defense. We're being attacked, and so on and so forth. And that is why 9/11 ultimately is so important in terms of what is happening today, which is a war without borders, a globalization of war.
We have to break this myth of 9/11 to really untangle all of the webs that have been weaved around it over the years and all of these wars that are going on right now. So on that note, we'll direct people, of course, to globalresearch.ca, where they will find enormous amounts of information, not only, of course, about 9/11 and related aspects of what happened on that day, but, of course, everything that's happening around the world as a result of that day as well.
And again, you were just listening to an interview on GRTV between James Corbett of The Corbett Report and Professor Michelle Chusudovsky of globalresearch.ca. So it seems to me that the people who planned and pulled off 9/11 must be getting a little nervous right about now, with so many people from around the globe researching the facts, challenging the official story, and sharing the truth through books, videos, websites, and conferences. And it even appears that the term the powers that be have used to squash discussion of 9/11 and other state crimes against democracy, this term isn't as effective as it used to be, because researchers are also sharing the origins of that term. You know the term, conspiracy theorist. And now I'd like to read you a few excerpts from an article written by Paul Craig Roberts called The Conspiracy Theory Narrative: Are You a Mind-Controlled CIA Stooge? And here goes. Do you smirk when you hear someone question the official story of Orlando, San Bernardino, Paris, or Nice? Do you feel superior to 2,500 architects and engineers, to firefighters, commercial and military pilots, physicists and chemists, and former high government officials who have raised doubts about 9/11? If so, you reflect the profile of a mind-controlled CIA stooge. The term conspiracy theory was invented and put into public discourse by the CIA in 1964 in order to discredit the many skeptics who challenged the Warren Commission's conclusion that John F. Kennedy was assassinated by a lone gunman named Lee Harvey Oswald, who himself was assassinated while in police custody before he could be questioned. The CIA used its friends in the media to launch a campaign to make suspicion of the Warren Commission report a target of ridicule and hostility. This campaign was one of the most successful propaganda initiatives of all time. the CIA's success in controlling public perception of what our founding fathers would have regarded as suspicious events involving the government enables those in power positions within government to orchestrate events that serve hidden agendas. The events of September 11 created the new paradigm of endless war on behalf of the Washington-dominated world. The CIA's success in controlling public perceptions has made it impossible to investigate elite political crimes. Consequently, it is now possible for treason to be official U.S. government policy. And again, that was from an article called The Conspiracy Theory Narrative, Are You a Mind-Controlled CIA Stooge? By Dr. Paul Craig Roberts. And I'm going to end the show today with a song by Martin Noakes called 9/11 Building 7. And here it is.
There's a million reasons why I don't believe it. There's a million reasons why it can't be true. States in order to proceed, a modern